Hello and welcome to the Psych Files. Michael Britt here, and this is episode 70, in which we look at serendipity and synchronicity. Seemed like those two words went together, so I threw them right into the title. Okay, so we are going to look at the issues, the contrasting problem of chance or coincidence versus synchronicity, which maybe is some things that happen together that aren't chance. The impetus for this episode comes from one of our listeners, Jean-Michel, who, so you can blame him. He got in contact with me after I released the self-help episode a few episodes back. And in the first version of that episode, I stated that synchronicity meant everything happens for a reason. And so he commented on the episode and said, you know, I don't think that's what Carl Jung, meant. He felt that Jung had some more complex ideas about what he meant by synchronicity than simply everything happens for a reason. And so there was sort of an implied challenge there, and so I took up the gauntlet and got a hold of a Jungian scholar and asked him, what exactly does synchronicity mean as Carl Jung meant it? So we're going to listen to Dr. Jeffrey Raff in just a moment, who will tell us about synchronicity. A couple of things, a couple of announcements. I do want to thank the listeners who have been emailing me recently and commenting. I've noticed that the number of comments and emails has gone up. In particular, I've gotten some wonderful emails and some interesting back and forth from Benjamin, Lee, Anita, Derek, Diane, Lindsay, Randy, and let's see if I can get this pronunciation right, Saide, S-A-E-I-D. D-E-H. That's my best pronunciation. So thank you for your emails, and it is wonderful to get. I appreciate your comments, appreciate the feedback. As you can see, this episode is a direct result of that feedback, and I learned a lot from it, so this, I hope, will be interesting to you as it has been to me. If I haven't gotten back to your emails, just hang in there. I can't sometimes get back to them during the week because it's a very busy week between work and family, but I will get back to your emails. I appreciate them. All right, so let's get into the episode. I want to look at synchronicity, but I also wanted to take a look at something that occurred to me. The reason that I mentioned in that episode about self-help books, why scientists would go crazy over the statement that everything happens for a reason, is that one of the goals of higher education, certainly, is to be a more critical thinker, right? And one of the things that we all have trouble with is the idea of understanding chance. Now, way back, I did an episode on statistics and why statistics make us so queasy, and there was that was inspired by a TED Talks video that I saw in which the speaker honestly said, it's very easy to agree with him, that statistics are hard. And particularly chance and probability. Those were not my favorite areas when I taught stats. It's hard. It's very weird. Probability is a strange kind of thing. If you remember, if you ever learned any probability, you'd see a number with an exclamation point next to it. And, it didn't come as intuitively, to me anyway, as did understanding things like t-tests and ANOVAs and stuff like that. So we have an innate difficulty understanding how chance works and how things that we think are really amazing and would never really happen actually are not that unusual at all. And so I've been reading a bunch of really interesting articles. Well, let me give you an example of that. Have you ever been to a party, or maybe even in, let's say you're a college student in class, and there are two people in class who discover that they have the exact same birthday? Now, of course, your reaction would be, quite naturally, you would say, oh, that's amazing, the exact same birthday. I mean, what are the odds? Well, I've been reading an article, or at least I tried to read this article, by Bruce Martin. And it's called Coincidences, Remarkable or Random? And it appeared in the 1998 issue, September, October, of Skeptical Inquirer. And it's really interesting because he does a couple things. He actually lays out the statistics for you, in which he shows you how this is calculated. Do you know that the odds of finding two people in a class or a holiday gathering who have the same birthday are actually not that unusual. All you would need, as it turns out, is 23 people. And if you're in a group of 23 people, there's a 50-50 chance that two people in that group will have the same birthday. But that's pretty amazing. And all you need to do is to get into a class of 35 people, or a rather large holiday get-together, 35 people, and you know what? There is an 80% chance that two people in that group will have the exact same birthday. Now, I know that sounds pretty wild, and I tried to work through these probability equations that he lays out here in the article, and if you want to, feel free to go through this, but he explains how it's done. All you would need is 57 people, and you would have a 99% chance of finding two people in that group who have the same birthday. So, not terribly unusual. Another related coincidence, which you may have noticed, was something I referred to way back, and I think it was episode 2 or 3, and this would be the one where you think of somebody, and that person calls you. Now, you've probably had that experience. We don't notice the things that don't happen. So, the idea here, behind this idea, behind you think about somebody and they call you, is that you don't notice the times during the year when you think of someone and they don't call you. If you really sat down, or if you kept a diary, and you marked down the people that you thought of that day, and I thought of my mother, thought of my brother, thought of my old Uncle Lou, my old friend Tim, etc., and you made a list of all these things, and you did that every single day, you would find out that, boy, you think about your brother a lot, and he didn't call you. But that one time that he did call you was the time that you remember. So we think that these things are amazing, but if we really threw this, you know, put the statistics down in front of ourselves and looked at the data, not the most fun thing to do, you probably would say to yourself, yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, think about it. It probably isn't as amazing as you think it would be. So that's a problem, and that's why, getting back to the whole guts of the issue here, this whole thing about everything happens for a reason. The reason why we have troubles with that, you know, scientific thinkers, critical thinkers, skeptics, teachers, is because to believe it is to feed into our natural inclination to make something out of nothing. Now, so I want to go into a couple more fun examples of that, and then I want to turn over to Dr. Raff, and because I do want to give some credence to this idea that perhaps there are times when two events could have meaning. But first, I want to tell you why it's a hard sell to teachers who really want students to be very careful and critical thinkers. Every college, I would bet, has in their creed, or their mission statement, that students should be critical thinkers when they leave. And there have been a lot of articles out recently, probably spurred on by a very popular one called "Is Google Making Us Stupid?" Maybe you have heard of this article. Let's see, it appeared, and stupid, by the way, being spelled S-T-O-O-P-I-D, and it appeared in the July-August 2008 issue of The Atlantic. So, interesting article, generated a lot of talk about what the internet is doing to us. Nothing new, really, right? I mean, the idea that students can copy and paste, and you don't have to really think that deeply or go that far. So there's a real worry among educators that students are losing their ability to concentrate for lengthy periods of time, that we're becoming even more and more a low attention span population. And so you'll find plenty of that, although I have a very interesting quote for you, which I found in a wonderful book. I'm reading a couple of books on parenting, my mission to try to become a better parent. There's a quote in one of these books which is just great, and it has to do sort of with this. You know, educators are always talking about students and bemoaning, oh my God. We think that things are always getting worse. Here's a quote for you. Children today are tyrants. And who said that? That is a quote by Socrates made back in 390 BC. So this seems like some kind of a problem that we've always complained about. I wanted to talk about one of the most interesting collection of coincidences that you may have heard in your life. And this is the coincidences, the strangeness of the similarities between Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. Maybe you've heard of some of these things. Let me list a few of them, and then we'll just take a quick look at them here, and I've got something else to surprise you with. First off, Abraham Lincoln was elected to Congress in 1846, and John F. Kennedy elected to Congress in 1946. Abraham Lincoln, elected president in 1860. John F. Kennedy, elected president in 1960, 100 years apart. The names Lincoln and Kennedy each have 7 letters. Both wives lost their children while living in the White House. Did you know that? Eerie. John Wilkes Booth was born in 1839, and Lee Harvey Oswald was born in 1939. Strange, huh? Okay, both assassins were known by 3 names. Both of their names are made up of 15 letters. Here's one of the stranger ones. John Wilkes Booth ran from the theater after he shot Lincoln and was caught in a warehouse. Lee Harvey Oswald ran from a warehouse where he shot Kennedy and was caught in a theater. Ah, very strange. And of course, probably the weirdest one, which is that Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy, and Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln. Eerie. Should have maybe saved these for a Halloween episode. Now, is that eerie? Is that strange? Is that weird? Well, I went to a really fun website, which I highly recommend. I probably have mentioned it before. It's called Snopes.com, S-N-O-P-E-S.com. And I highly recommend this. Really kind of a neat thing, because what it does is you can put in, as I did, I put Lincoln and Kennedy and got this. But you can investigate myths and strange occurrences, and it will tell you, it will give you some in-depth information. If you think about the coincidence that Lincoln was elected president in 1860 and Kennedy in 1960. Now, that sounds pretty weird, right? But the thing is, if you think about this, elections are held every 4 years. So there are a goodly number of years that you'd really have to eliminate from consideration. And I'll quote from the Snopes article, "Lincoln couldn't possibly have been elected president in 1857 or 1858 or 1859 or 1861 or 1862 or 1863. And Kennedy couldn't possibly have been elected in 1957, 1958, 1959, 61, 62, or 63. So it's not like it could have been any year that they could possibly have been elected, and yet they were elected 100 years apart. Isn't that weird? It's not quite like that if you look into it. The interesting observation that Lincoln and Kennedy, the names have 7 letters. Okay, that's true. But their first names don't have the same number of letters, John and Abraham. But we'd leave that out, right? I mean, you would leave that out. And that's the thing. Again, you don't notice what does not happen. But scientists do. I like this one. Both presidents were shot on a Friday. Now, that's either eerie, or if you think about it in a little bit more, you say to yourself, well, you know what? Where are the presidents on a Tuesday afternoon at 1:30? Well, they're probably in the White House, right? I mean, when are the presidents out and about? And if you were going to shoot a president, you would probably not choose Tuesday afternoon or Thursday morning at 11:30. It would probably have to be a Friday, a Saturday, or a Sunday, right? A weekend. So again, it sounds bizarre, but if you think about it, you don't have any time of the week. If you're going to shoot the president, you have to focus in on only certain particular times. Here's another coincidence. They were both shot in the head. I don't know if that's a coincidence, but as this wonderful article in Snopes points out, if you're going to kill the president, you're probably not going to shoot him in the foot, right? Or the left arm, or in the tibia. You're probably going to shoot either in the head or for the heart, right? Now, this is one that's very often mentioned, which is that Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy, and Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln. Well, as it turns out, according to Snopes, and, you know, maybe Snopes isn't right, but according to them, they could not find a secretary for Lincoln who had the name Kennedy. So that one appears wrong. Okay, finally, both presidents had successors whose last name was Johnson. Now that's either weird, or ask yourself, how common is the name Johnson in America? That's a pretty common last name. So for more of this, I highly recommend the Snopes article. But one of the articles in Skeptical Inquirer also laid down a kind of gauntlet here. This was one way back in, I think this was the early 90s, 1992, in which the author John Levy found a really interesting article called Our Spooky Presidential Coincidences Contest. And here, neat article, I'll have a link to it from the website. He also lists some of these similarities between Lincoln and Kennedy. And instead of debunking any of them, he goes on to take a look at some other presidents to see if there weren't some interesting similarities between, oh, choose any two presidents. And wouldn't you know, he found them. For example, he found that McKinley and Garfield were both shot in September, in the first year of their current term. Chester Alan Arthur and Theodore Roosevelt have 17 letters. How about Richard Nixon and Thomas Jefferson? Well, turns out they both had vice presidents who left office under a cloud of scandal, that being Aaron Burr and Spiro Agnew. Both lost a presidential election to a Harvard graduate named John. So here's what I did, okay? I decided to just go into good old Wikipedia, opened up two tabs in my browser, and in one of them, I looked up John McCain, and in the other, Barack Obama. And for those of you who are outside of the country, many listeners abroad, thank you very much for being a part of the Psych Files. John McCain is currently running against Barack Obama for the presidency of the United States. Well, guess what I found? This is really eerie. Hang in there. Okay, guess what? They're both men. All right, I know. Okay, all right, forget that one. That's not my strongest one. I got more coming here. See, but you would, obviously, you would say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's not an eerie coincidence. Okay, listen to this one. They were both born in August. Okay, you say. That's a 1 out of 12 chance there. You're not convinced yet? Okay, how about this? Barack Obama was born on August 4th and McCain on the 29th. So what, you say? All right, that's 25 days apart. Okay. McCain was born in 1936 and Obama in 1961. That's 25 years apart. Interesting, the number 25 seems to play an interesting part here. McCain announced his presidency on April 25th. McCain was named by Time magazine as one of the 25 most influential people in America. Barack Obama spoke at Wright State University, in which he was first referred to as a rock star, on February 25th. Now, I'm sure there are more of the number 25 coincidences, interesting, between Obama and McCain. But that's as far as I got. I'm sure I could find more, though, if I dug a little deeper. Okay, just for those of you who aren't convinced yet, this is interesting. Obama wrote a book called Dreams from My Father, and McCain wrote a book called Faith of My Fathers. Here's a really interesting one. Are you ready? McCain, Obama, and Biden, and Joe Biden is Obama's running mate, were all named after their fathers, and Sarah Palin, the VP for McCain, was named after her mother. So all four of these people were named after their parents. Here's one I had a little bit of pushback against. Palin and Biden both have 5 letters, and in my opinion, those names rhyme. Palin, Biden, Biden, Palin. It's sort of a rhyme. It's, you know, you could make a rhyme out of that. And I ask you, how many vice presidential candidates in any election had last names that could potentially rhyme? I think that's a little bit unusual. Okay, last couple here. Both Obama and McCain have 2 daughters. Of course, McCain also has 2 sons. But that's not the important point here. You're getting off the main point. The point is they both have 2 daughters. But the point is also that if I don't pay any attention to other information, then you might say, hey, wow, they both have two daughters. That's interesting. I was able to find these by not spending nearly as much time as people have spent on the whole Lincoln and Kennedy thing. Hopefully this demonstrates the truth of the saying that we don't notice what doesn't happen. And that is what is going to bring us to the topic of synchronicity. Are there times when two things happen together and it actually does have some meaning? And so I'm going to let Dr. Jeffrey Raff talk to you now about Carl Jung's concept of synchronicity. I think it's really pretty interesting. Okay, here we go. We are here with Dr. Jeffrey Raff. Dr. Raff has trained at the Jung Institute in Zurich and is in private practice in Denver. So he's here to talk to us about synchronicity. So maybe, Dr. Raff, you can tell us a little bit more about your background.
I was a graduate student in psychology in the early 70s when I first heard about Jung and a little bit about his theory, where we had a class that was called Heresy 101 because Jung was not very widely accepted in the academic world. I doubt that he still is. And that got me interested, and I started to record my dreams at that time. And the interest in my dreams led me into analysis in New York about 1971, I guess. And it went from there to an interest in actually being an analyst. And so moved to Zurich for 4 years with my family and studied over there. And upon coming back from Zurich, moved to Denver.
Specifically in Jung, not Freudian analysis. They wanted to be Jungian.
Yes, that's right. I did have some exposure to Freud, but my own interest really took me more into Jung because I was more interested in spiritual questions that I didn't think Freud really addressed very well. So my interest in spirituality, mysticism, led me to Jung. And at that time, you know, a lot of hippies went over to Zurich, so it was there were a great deal of Americans there. And then after that, I went to Colorado and started private practice, and about 10 years ago, began writing, and I've written 4 books and, well, I'd say 10 or 12 articles now.
All right. Well, the reason specifically that you're here is to talk to us a bit about the concept of synchronicity. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what Jung meant by this term.
It has become popularized and maybe changed. It doesn't mean everything happens for a reason, but it is concerned with the nature of meaning and whether events have meaning or not. Synchronistically specifically refers to what Jung called meaningful coincidence. And these are chance events that turn out to have meaning. And I'll talk about what meaning means in a minute, but Jung never believed that everything that happened was meaningful. For example, there could be simple chance that isn't a synchronicity. So synchronicity refers specifically to chance events that actually are meaningful. And what Jung had in mind was the occurrence in pretty close proximity of an inner event and an outer event. For example, you might dream about a butterfly, and the next day you run into butterflies everywhere you go. We would call that a synchronicity because the outer event, the butterfly, is related to the inner event, which is the dream about the butterfly.
So you're saying that your mind is just more attuned to seeing butterflies, or is it that there is some meaningfulness between these two events?
There is some meaningfulness. It's not that your mind is attuned to seeing the butterflies. It's that actually physically you wind up with a lot of butterflies. I know one story, for example, of a man whose close friend had died, and he was going to the funeral, and the night before the funeral dreamt that she had turned into this beautiful butterfly. And he went to the funeral, and while he was attending the funeral, a butterfly landed on his head. And he was struck. He had a very strong feeling about the meaningfulness of that butterfly because of his dream. So there are 3 ingredients in a synchronicity, and all of them have to be there for us to talk about a synchronicity. There has to be an inner event, such as a dream, fantasy, a vision, sometimes even just thinking about something. An outer event that corresponds to the inner event in some way, and a very strong emotional reaction. There's always a strong feeling in a synchronicity of, wow, that was something. If you don't have a strong feeling, then we don't consider it a synchronicity. It's that strong feeling that accompanies the experience that really is the hallmark of Jung's definition.
And then doesn't that strong feeling then lead to some insight? Is it the solution to a problem?
That's right.
Yeah.
It can then lead to insight, an opening, a really strong sense of what direction to go in. There's a definite feeling that this was meaningful, not only because of that strong feeling, but because when you thought about it, worked on it, it led to an insight that was particularly meaningful to you.
I can see some listeners would say, well, you know, isn't that just confirmation bias? In other words, you happen to remember something. A lot of things happen, but you just happen to pick up on the one that had something to do with your dream. You know where I'm going with this? You could be seeing butterflies every day, but you just happen to have this dream, and then you make this connection.
The argument that I think Jung would make is, so what? I mean, if you have that strong feeling today, and you didn't have it yesterday because you didn't have the dream yesterday, but you had the dream last night, today you see a butterfly, you have a strong feeling, that's what creates the synchronicity, the strong feeling. So yes, there might be always butterflies in your environment and you never noticed, but the fact that it comes to you at that particular moment after that particular dream nevertheless strikes you. And there's where the meaning is, in the subjective feeling.
Okay. So that would be why you would say it wasn't just confirmation bias. In other words, the old thing about, well, I thought about my mother and she called me.
Right. That could be a synchronicity. I mean, if you're sitting around talking about mom and she hasn't called for 6 months, she calls right at that moment, and you have a feeling of wow, then we would call that a synchronicity.
If she hasn't called for 6 months, I mean, some might say, well, she's called at other times, but you didn't notice that
right.
Connection at that time.
Right, and you wouldn't, from a Jungian perspective, argue with that. We would just say, well, that's an example of chance that isn't meaningful. So there wasn't any aha feeling with it. There wasn't any shock with it. There was just, yeah, mom's call. That's why Jung says not everything that happens is synchronicity, because all these things could be happening all the time, but just one particular moment, you have this strong feeling, and there is a connection with an inner event that takes place, and that's when it's no longer meaningless chance. It's meaningful chance.
So he's not saying that everything happens for a reason.
Okay. No.
Okay, so let me just throw one more at you. We know that your mind works over problems while you sleep at night. Is mm-hmm. this an example of your mind further working out or coming to a solution? You're not overtly aware of it until things come together. Perhaps you see something.
And that would be true in some cases. There is another aspect of synchronicity, though. I mean, it takes us into the whole realm of parapsychology. I've given you some fairly rational ones that you could say, oh, this happens every day. A person who had a strong dream about needing to have a new perception of reality, get out of kind of thinking ruts. And he was walking along and he heard an inner voice that said to him, there is no time. And at that moment, his watch broke and fell off his wrist. Now, that's a synchronicity, because he had obviously a very strong feeling reaction to that. Here's an example, however, where the physical reaction of the watch breaking at exactly that moment takes us into a feeling that the physical reality, the ordinary outer world, was behaving in an extraordinary way. So through synchronicity, Jung was also opening the door for our study of certain kinds of parapsychological phenomena. So at that point, we can't say it's just our mind working on a problem. It turns out to be rather big events that seem to show the inner world and the outer world are related in an extraordinary way.
And so for this person who had this inner voice and the watch thing, did this lead to something else, or what did this mean?
For him, it meant, number one, that he was a very rational person, and this kind of challenged his rational belief about the world. But it led also to how he viewed time and how he related to time, because he was pretty compulsive about time, and the way that he lived his life was very regimented. So when he started to imagine the world without time, in the sense that he used it, it led to a great deal of freedom for him, escaping from some of his obsession. This is another aspect of synchronicity I don't think I mentioned, and that very important part of Jung's definition. A synchronicity is an event that's what he calls acausal. A synchronicity, to be a synchronicity, is something that relates, again, the inner and the outer, but in a way that's not causal. It's a non-rational relationship. So in the example about the time, we can't say the voice saying there is no time caused the watch to fall off. For Jung, that would be magical thinking. All we can say is that the outer event of the watch falling off, the inner event of the vision, were related in some kind of non-causal fashion. And then that led him into the whole idea of acausality, and led to a great deal of interest in his part in modern physics, quantum physics.
So, yeah, I guess the question comes, if you don't think that this is just a chance event, if you don't think that it's the mind trying to work out a problem, then I guess the question would come, so what causes these two things to happen at the same time?
Right. That's the big question.
Okay.
First of all, again, Jung would say nothing causes it. We have to try and think in an acausal fashion, which is very hard to do, but some Jungians say behind the synchronicity, behind every synchronicity is an archetype. And an archetype getting excited within the psyche somehow causes these two things to happen. It's a kind of causal explanation. Jung offered several different ideas, but never really said that he had come to a definite conclusion about why this happens. His deepest explanation, I think, is that there is a deeper reality underneath the inner and the outer that unites both of them. So behind the ordinary world, there is a unified world, which in alchemy was called the unus mundus, the one world. And Jung uses that expression quite a bit. We can think of the outer world and the inner world as being two expressions of the same deeper reality. And so this deeper reality can express itself in either an external or an internal form, or both at the same time.
I guess a couple of thoughts come to mind. One is I can understand why it hasn't had sort of the wide academic acceptance. If you think about our sort of Western tradition of, we're pretty rooted in the scientific method, and what you're proposing and what you're discussing here is doesn't sound like it's really testable in the traditional sense.
No, that's one problem. Jung was very interested in, as I said, parapsychology and quantum physics. He had a lot of correspondence with Rhine, who did all those parapsychological experiments back in the 50s.
Can you tell us briefly what he did?
Well, J.B. Rhine, I think, is the correct name. And back when Jung was alive, he was the leading experimenter in parapsychology. He did a lot of the early ESP experiments and had people, you know, trying to guess card.
Oh, those five cards with the star and the squiggly line. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So Jung was very interested in his work, but also ultimately believed that you couldn't experimentally prove synchronicity because you can't duplicate it. You can't make it happen. It either happens or it doesn't happen. That's the problem with trying to get it in a laboratory of some kind. But he was also very interested in quantum physics because the very nature of quantum physics is trying to get his moving away from the ordinary scientific, I think, concept of reality. He had a lot of correspondence with Wolfgang Pauli, one of the early leaders in quantum physics, and Pauli was very interested in synchronicity and believed that quantum physics ultimately would come to the same place that Jung had arrived at.
Now, quantum physics, that sounds like quite a heavy topic. Is there a...
that's a different topic.
I know, right? And I've seen some popular books that refer to it, but I've never read them. I mean, is there anything on it that the lay reader would find understandable?
There's the Tao of physics.
Oh, yes, I've seen that. How do you pronounce that? Is that Tao or is it
the Tao? Yeah, Tao or Tao of physics.
Oh, okay.
There's one other one that I can't remember the name right now. The Dancing Wooly Master, I think it was called.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Those are very good introductions. They're slanted to convince you that modern physics is kind of related to Eastern philosophy, and so they're a little biased in their approach, but they're really good for an introduction to quantum physics. But quantum physics deals with things like what they're calling non-locality, for example, where one particle can influence another particle without coming into contact with it. And no one knows quite how that happens. So if you can have one particle influencing another particle without any physical contact, it's kind of the same. It leads you into thinking acausally. It's kind of like synchronicity, where one thing happens with another thing where they didn't touch each other physically. They're not related causally that way.
Yeah, I can understand better why we'd be talking psychology one minute and physics the next.
Right. There is a physicist also, Victor Hansen, I think it is, who has a book out on synchronicity from the point of view of quantum physics.
Well, you know, I think I can understand better why people who are sort of immersed in critical thinking or scientific thinking would find the concept difficult to swallow, let's say, and how easily it could be adapted, let's say, by people who'd make it mean that everything happens for a reason.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Jeff. Again, I appreciate you taking the time. All right. Well, there you go. And thank you very much, Dr. Raff, for taking the time to share your knowledge with us and give us a better sense of what synchronicity is all about. And if you're interested in learning more about Carl Jung, Dr. Raff recommends a journal called Quadrant, Quadrant, which is put out by the New York Jung Institute. Well, then I will leave it to you to decide what your opinion is of synchronicity, whether you think it falls into that area of coincidence, or whether maybe there are times when what appears to be coincidence actually had some important meaning for your life. All right, well, that's this week's episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. And I really think somebody ought to look into those 25s with John McCain. I think there might be something there. All right, folks, thanks again for listening to the Psych Files, and